Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, broadcasting live from the Kintec Studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Somebody texted in, if I'm not a contractor or a rental warrior, can I still visit Dunbar Lumber? Of course. All of your lumber needs. Although I question what it falls into if you're not doing one or the other. I guess just like minor woodworking projects or something. But yeah, man, go to Dunbar Lumber. No matter what you need, they will help you out. Dmitry Filipovich going to join us at 1 o'clock. Got an open segment here. So keep sending your texts in. As mentioned, we haven't really broken it down or gotten into it, but the team, the Canucks, are chasing for that final wild card spot in the Western Conference right now. The Calgary Flames, they made a pretty significant deal last night. They acquire Joel Farabee and Morgan Frost from the Flyers. They send former Canuck Andre Kuzmenko, Jacob Pelche, and a couple of picks, including a second round pick this year, back to Philadelphia. And kind of an interesting deal from both perspectives, Drantz. Probably the most immediate upshot is, you know, Andre Kuzmenko, I know he'd put up some points recently, but he's been really out of favor in Calgary, and Jacob Pelche's never really hit like they wanted to. So they had some talent. They get better in the near term here by making this deal.
So there's a player type I think you always want to bet on. Guy with juice playing for John Tortorella. Now, Joel Farabee, big body, some speed, some rush attacking skills, some ability to do some Kuzmenko stuff, actually, albeit less efficiently in terms of potting greasy goals from basically the edge of the blue paint.
Yep.
But he ran really hot last year for a team that ran hot in general, scoring off the rush. I think there was a lot of softness in his 20-goal season. I think he's more like a, let's call him like a souped-up Danton Heinen, to be totally honest with you. A little bit more offensive, a little bit less defensive. But, you know, a capable top-nine guy. But Morgan Frost has juice. Morgan Frost has juice and has struggled offensively, playing for a Tortorella system that I don't think suits him at all. I love that acquisition for Calgary.
All right.
Now, he doesn't have, like, I like buying Farabee as a pure cap dump because I think he can play.
Yeah.
But Morgan Frost is an acquisition with real upside, especially given, you know, Backlund's an older player. Sharon Govich, I like more on the wing. Kadri, Kadri is an older player, right? Like, the Flames don't have a lot coming on defense, at center. And, you know, so many of the upside picks they've made across the last couple of years, you know, Parekh's a defenseman, Bash is a winger, right? Like, the guys that I like best in their system, Gradin is a winger. Like, they needed exactly a player like Morgan Frost. To get him for two guys on the fringes of their roster, I mean, Pelche, I had high hopes for, but he hasn't been able to carve out a spot on that roster.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes waiver eligible in October and is only a year younger than Farabee, who's like a, you know, at least a 35 point guy who, by the way, I'd add this one thing about Farabee that I like: big body, can play an area game, can pot some greasy goals, and can attack off the rush. Some potential that fit with Huberto makes a ton of sense. So
yeah.
I love this deal for Calgary.
And the thing
I think
this
was a home run.
The thing with Farabee is, you know, $5 million per season for 3 years after this one. So it doesn't expire till 2028. So that obviously still enough. I think even in the new salary cap world, you're talking about, you know, a winger signed to that type of commitment who's not clearly top six, even if they're clearly top nine, which means they're a third line player. Still enough to scare teams away. But from Calgary's perspective, I mean, they've got just mountains and mountains of cap space. And it's not like, you know, you're projecting ahead and saying like, oh, they've got this big expensive extension coming up that they got a plan for, right? It's not like they're big players in free agency typically. So for them, and you start projecting the cap going up, I think the risk of locking into Joel Farabee at that number is much, much lower than it would be for a lot of teams. And then you get the Morgan Frost acquisition to see if you can unlock a little bit more of his offense there as well. And, you know, is it like an earth-shattering move for Calgary? No, but I think it's smart considering their specific circumstances as a way of, you know, we're not doing the full-on teardown thing, but we don't want to like move valuable futures to bring in players. So this raises our ceiling a little bit within the confines of where our team is.
Yeah, they still have two firsts and a second in this draft, right? Like, no, I mean, I think this was a perfect way for them to reset the decks. I like that Philly was able to carve out cap flex. I'm not saying that this was a steal, but I think it's a home run for where Calgary is at. I think both players offer upside. And now you're talking about a top nine of, you know, Zari and Coronado and Huberdeau and Kadri and Farabee and
Coleman, Backlund,
and Frost.
Yeah.
And Sharangovich. Sharangovich would complete the set. And that gives you nine. Obviously, no game breakers there. Like, a lot of this hinges on Parekh, especially because now the Flames are kind of locked into not being bad enough, probably, to be like a Gavin McKenna team, quite frankly, especially because I believe in Dustin Wolf. So, you know, long term, they're going to have some issues. Like, taking upside shots on guys like Morgan Frost is exactly what they need to do here, because what the Flames now have is a really good template on which to graft elite talent. The problem is other than Parekh,
where do they get the elite talent?
Where do they get the elite talent?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a big Basha believer, but man, like, that's a second round pick who I like. You know what I mean? It's a different thing entirely. So I do think the Flames coming out of this deal have a long-term issue in that they have arrived at a place where they might be too good to get the piece they really need organically.
You're telling me the Calgary Flames of all teams are going to be not contenders, but not bad enough to draft highly either.
That my worry is that this locks them into that.
Shocking.
However, that's a long-term thing.
Yeah.
Over the balance of the season, the Flames, a team that I have not for a minute taken seriously as having a real shot at finishing ahead of the Canucks, I think have added the juice they needed for that to be something that could happen if things bounce their way.
Well, we're also what? We're 30 games left in the season. Like, a lot of weird outcomes can happen in 30 games.
100%.
You know right. What I mean? Especially if it's like they've got a talented goalie.
Yeah.
A talented, you throw a talented goalie into the mix of almost like any team over 30 games,
and they can be one of the best teams.
The range of outcomes is extremely high.
Yeah.
So they are absolutely, even if you are still a skeptic of the overall talent level of Calgary, just this point in the season plus the goaltending, they're very live to make the playoffs, to finish above the Canucks. I mean, look, they're just barely behind Colorado by points percentage. Like, they could surpass Colorado easily. I wouldn't bet on it. I'm not saying it's likely or anything, or that they're better than Colorado, but just we're at the stage of the season where randomness starts to really come into play, and goaltending, of course, a huge factor of randomness. So we're long past the stage of like, oh, they'll fall out for sure with Calgary.
Yeah.
It's just we have no idea.
Put it this way. Over the last 25 games, the Columbus Blue Jackets have 8 more points than the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah.
If you'd said that 25 games ago, most people would have rolled their eyes at you.
Exactly. Like, right? Over that sample of games, a lot of different stuff.
Although
a lot of different things could happen.
Although, let's be real, this Columbus Blue Jackets team has juice.
Yeah, man.
Anyway.
Just wait until they get Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, okay. No, I really loved this deal for Calgary. Really loved it. And I'm fascinated to see how it works out. I think this Flames team, at the very least, they now are, in my mind, in with a shot at outlasting Vancouver and Utah.
Absolutely.
Also, I want to talk LA really quick.
Well, hold on. This one, before we move on from this trade, Reg says, I can't figure out the Flyers side of this deal. Why did they do it? I think the big one is,
well, they got off Farabee's commitment,
the
and they sold Frost.
And Frost clearly was just like not going to work there.
Well, but also he's expiring, right?
He's an RFA.
Yeah. With only 1 year left of team control. So he's in that he's got arbitration rights, which is always annoying, especially if you don't believe in the player, right? Your outcome with him was going to be like, especially if you don't believe in the guy and aren't going to reach a long-term settlement, is going to be like a 1 or 2 year deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's going to be contentious, and he's going to have less value because you have walked him to UFA as opposed to like, hey, Calgary, do you want to take a 30 game look at this guy and then come to terms with your own evaluation, right? Make your own bet on this guy. Like Calgary would love that. Calgary's like, we need a young center with some skill and some juice. This is perfect for us. For Philly, it's like, ugh. You know, so there's a huge value gap there. So you sell Frost and get value back for him at nearly your last chance to do so. And you get off of this Farabee commitment that is too much for too long for a middle six guy. I mean, that's the benefit for them. They, Calgary bought what Philly viewed as a cap dump and a guy they weren't going to commit to long term. Luckily for Calgary, the reason I like it is that Calgary was able to pay cap dump and guy you don't believe in prices to acquire guys I like more than Philly seems to. But Philly was able to monetize that at the very death and get an expiring contract back and like an okay lotto ticket in Peliche. Maybe he figures it out for us and some draft pick. Capital.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a deal that makes sense for both sides. I don't think this is a hosing by any means. I would just way rather be the team buying low than the team selling pieces that I think are good for pennies on the dollar.
It is a great example to me of the fact that NHL trades, I think, are sometimes much less about like player value in a vacuum than we think and much more about specific team circumstances. Mm. And I think that really shines through here. The teams just have very different interests in the short term and different evaluations on these players and how they fit and all of that. And that allows for this deal to come together. This is also one of the deals that always cracks me up. The second draft pick, I believe, was a 2028 seventh round pick. And it's just like, okay, we got the deal in place. Guys, if you do not include that seventh round pick, I am hanging up. I'm walking away. That 2028 seventh round pick.
But yeah, like there's some.
Got it included.
There's some 13-year-old in Prince George.
15 or 14-year-old, I think. 2028?
Yeah, it's four drafts from now.
Yeah.
So like, kid will be turning 18 that year.
Yeah.
So he's 13 or like no, he'd have
that
to
would be.
Be
it's 2025. A 13-year-old is getting drafted.
2025 draft, 26, 27, 28.
I know.
Draft eligibility age is all the way to September 15. If he's if he's 14, that means he was born in the first 2 years, 2 months. Like
that's true.
That means he was born in the first 4 weeks. So probability favors my side of this, Jamie. Anyway.
That's fair. By the way,
I need a
2028 draft prospect.
There you go. Well, some kid named Riker in Prince George that the Philadelphia Flyers just acquired. Anyway, I want to talk Kings really quick. Kings have faded. They're on one of those stretches that kill you.
Yeah.
2-7-1 across their last 10 games. Ouch. You can't have these stretches. Those stretches where you only get 25% of points across a 10-game stretch. Like, you know, if it was 2-5-3... they'd still be like 2 points clear, points clear of where the Canucks and the Flames are. And by the way, they still are clear of where the Canucks and the Flames are because they have those games in hand. Here's the thing about the Kings. 4% on ice shooting across these last 10 games. They don't have a lot of offensive juice, so I'm not saying that they're going to like, you know, speed back to 12% or 13%, mm-hmm. but this is not one of those stretches where their form has really fallen off. They're still one of the best 5-on-5 teams in hockey. That's going to be enough. That's going to be enough for them to remain squarely in the mix. I don't think there's a world where they fall out. I think they're materially better than Calgary and Vancouver in terms of the way that they play 5-on-5. And I have zero concerns about the Kings by the dip.
What do you make of the Brant Clark healthy scratches?
Yeah, that they shouldn't be doing that. they need all the juice that they can get in the lineup. Like that's the issue, right? So Brant Clark helps in that on that front. They'll need to get him back in. And my guess is now that they haven't scored in either of the two games that he was a healthy scratch for, my guess is that they will.
Now, I do want to just double back quickly to the Flyers here, because I don't think I'm the only one in Vancouver who now has been so fully like poisoned by the Pedersen Miller discourse that any move that happens around the NHL, I immediately filter through the lens of what does this mean for either Elias Pedersen or JT Miller. So having said that, you know, you see Philadelphia clear cap space, clear cap commitments for next year. Next year, albeit not this year, right? But okay, hey, could they be interested in acquiring a player with some long-term commitment to bolster their rebuilding process. And I think the one that makes more sense, I even saw your Athletic colleague, Kevin Kurz, made this point as well, or Kurtz, that his sense is the team would be more interested in potentially acquiring JT Miller. I don't think we've heard, I don't think any insider or anything has thrown out Philadelphia specifically, but you think, you know, East Coast of the United States, and you always hear that, well, there's lots of teams, and there's teams we're missing, there's teams we're not talking about. This is something that occurred to me, and I start, you know, you start doing the thing where it's like, okay, who's coming back to make the salaries match here? Like Scott Laughton, okay, center. You need a center back. You're not getting a top six, maybe, per Jim Rutherford, so you get Scott Laughton back as your center. Rasmus Ristolainen, we've heard his name connected to the Canucks in the past.
Yeah, I think they do like him. Okay, first of all, before we go down this route, we all must agree that there is something very Flyers coded about JT Miller.
100%.
Now he
John
might,
Tortorella's their coach.
Now, you know, as a guy who grew up in the Pittsburgh area, he might hate to hear that. But, John Tortorella didn't like JT Miller when he coached him.
That was when he was a rookie. Neither did AV, but then AV is like, he gets it now, remember? Remember that?
Yeah. Did he forget it,
AV? Have we followed up with AV on that?
No. Why would we do that? Oh, man. By the way, one of the funniest moments ever was, because the actual AV quote was, tell him that I said he gets it now.
Yeah.
And we go to the locker room, me, Ben Kuzma, Ian McIntyre. We go to the Canucks locker room afterwards. And I don't remember why, but I was talking to somebody with Mac, and Ben Kuzma started talking to JT about it. And he was like giving these, like, John Tortorella had some words for you, and you could see
JT. But yeah.
What did I say?
It's all right, Tortorella.
AV. Yeah. AV had some words for you, and you could see JT Miller's like face drop, and he's like, what'd he say? And like,
started having flashbacks. He's like, that guy's still on me?
And like, Ian McIntyre to come and like walk it back and like explain that he was like, you get it. Honestly, so funny.
You thought AV was getting one more rip in, one more tirade in. That's so funny.
All I'm saying is there's something a little bit Flyers coded about JT.
I think it'd be
fun to see him in orange. You know, if that ever happened, just in terms of
their fans would love him.
Yeah. Now that said, and I'm not doubting Kevin Kurz's reporting, but like everything the Flyers have done across the last few years has been to look years and years ahead.
Yep.
You know, like, what about their recent activity, Briere's recent activity across the last 2.5 years, points to them being a more probable JT Miller than Elias Pettersson team? You know, I can't find it. Like, I'm not doubting, again, I'm not doubting my colleague. I'm just saying, I find that difficult to square with the old past behavior dictates future behavior perspective on this. As for Ristolainen, there's a player type that I don't really like.
And it's Rasmus Ristolainen.
He fits it. Here, I'll tell you what it is. It's like big and toolsy, but not with the highest on-ice IQ, and not heavy. That so, combination. Yeah,
like, theoretically big. Well, no, actually big, but doesn't play
physically big.
Yeah. Not theoretically.
And has
big
tools. So, like, can do some things that wow you offensively, but doesn't play smart and doesn't do, like, hard, physical, gritty stuff.
Yeah.
It's my least favorite player type. I think if you go back through all the guys that I've been critical of in the past or players that I've, like, really recommended, it's like, I really like hardworking guys with some dog in them and a lot of on-ice intelligence and on and on.
You like the Nick Blankenbergs. I brought that up for a reason. As opposed to the Rasmus Ristolainen.
Or Garland, or you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, think about all the guys in the, like, Kuzmenko had the obvious tools, and I was like, nope, doesn't work hard enough. Doesn't play hard enough. Not for me. Not for me. This is lucky. I'm out. Jake Virtanen was like the perfect example where it's like you totally understood why people were talking themselves into him. And I was just like, this guy can't handle rims. What are we talking about? He's bad. Anyway, Ristolainen for me is one of those guys that I just like, I know I have my own biases toward it. I don't love the player, but been thinking about it a little bit, especially in the wake of what we've seen with Hughes and Myers, for example. Mm-hmm. Big right-handed guy with like really special shooting talent from the perimeter. He's got an awesome, awesome wrist shot from the point. He's a hard shooter. I mean, you put him with Quinn Hughes and the two-way gaps in his game are going to be non-existent, even beyond what Tockett and Foote can probably help him with. Okay. And then you add the fact that he's got this skill set, this offensive toolkit that I think is a pretty good compliment. And I sort of wonder, like, could he be poor man's Evan Bouchard for Hughes? Do the same, like, he's perfectly calibrated to capitalize off the environment that Hughes creates, even if he's not creating that environment. Now, Bouchard's a way better player. Totally different class of defender. Bouchard does more to contribute to the environment in Edmonton by a mile than Ristolainen would if you put him on Hughes's right side. But I do think it could work. I don't love the term on the deal. I wouldn't be like hammering the table and being like, that's a great fit. Yeah. But I do think a player like Ristolainen can work potentially, given sort of how his skill set might complement Quinn's.
It is interesting. Remember early in Quinn Hughes's career, we would see Hughes Myers, especially like when they were chasing games or something occasionally.
And they never, always killed it.
Well, did they though? I was always got the kind of sense that's like, it's not a great fit.
They always killed it from an underlying perspective.
Yeah. But I do think it speaks to Quinn Hughes leveling up. Like, people are hyping up Tyler Myers recently, and that's fair. He's been really good. It's also because he's playing with Quinn Hughes.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I've put a moratorium on singing the praises of Quinn Hughes'
partner.
Yeah, like it's a just, I mean, not that we don't give guys credit. I think Myers has been playing well independent of being with Quinn Hughes across
so
like
too,
2 months.
But it's also like it looks so much better as soon as you put him with Quinn Hughes.
I mean, it was something I used to joke about that the Canucks should be drafting, doing everything they can to draft like a walk of Brandon Carlos, inflate their value and deal them. Like I used to, in Quinn Hughes' rookie season, I think I wrote that in a notebook that like they should just be finding guys to play with Quinn so that they can pump their value up and trade them as like promising young defensemen. I mean, look, it could work. It's all I'm saying. It could work. I don't love the package. Scott Laughton, I'd rather have Noah Cates. You throw Noah Cates in there and we're talking.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing totally hypothetical that we just made up. No one is reporting this.
No. But this is for fun.
My issue with a hypothetical Laughton Ristolainen package is, you don't actually save any cap. In fact, you're adding $100,000 to your salary cap commitment with that. For this year and next.
Yeah.
So that limits, if you're not excited about those players, and I think that's fair, that really limits the upside of doing a JT Miller trade.
My view is the cap flex, given the skills we've seen this Canucks front office demonstrate, right, in terms of pro scouting in particular. My firm belief at this point is that provided that you get cap relief on a potential JT Miller trade, you're probably coming out ahead. By the way, this does add to the Kuzmenko trade, Elias Lindholm trade tree.
Oh, of course.
Way, right.
Yeah.
So now from Calgary's perspective, it's like a second, a seventh, and Lindholm for the poo-poo platter that the Canucks sent the Flames, which now has like bodies to it, right? Like it's Matvei Gridin.
Yeah.
Prospect I don't really love, by the way. Speaking of big and sort of soft toolsy guy, but you throw Farabee and Frost into the mix, and I think you like it a little bit more from Calgary's perspective.
Absolutely.
Right?
I mean, it's you do, but it's also just like so Calgary because it raises the floor, but how much does it raise the ceiling? You know what I mean?
Well, see, I'm telling you, I think Frost can raise the ceiling.
That'll be the big question.
I think if this was a lesser player, if they'd gotten a lesser player than Frost, if they didn't bring in a guy who I buy can blow up the way you sometimes see guys in their mid-20s blow up, I would like this a lot less. But I actually think Frost gives them a direct path to get a guy who we talk about 18 months from now in a way that has no relationship to the way that we're talking about him today. And the fact that they were able to land something like that in this deal is what makes it a home run in my book.
All right, we'll take a break here. Dmitry Filipovich joins us next in studio on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Now joining us in studio here, as he always does on a Friday, he's the host of the Hockey PDO cast on the Sportsnet Radio Network. He is Dmitry Filipovich.
And thankfully he missed me talking myself into Ristolainen in the last segment.
Oh, I could hear it. I was in another room and I could hear your passionate debate about it. So don't you worry about that.
Just loves him some Ristolainen.
I do not, to be clear. Dim, let's talk Calgary Flames. I've been wrong about them. I was wrong about them at first. I bought what they were doing early.
Yeah.
But I didn't think they had the juice required to keep up with a team like Vancouver, just given how high Vancouver's floor is and how many more game breakers Vancouver has in the lineup than Calgary, regardless of what level they played to through the first 50 games. I didn't really buy that Calgary had a realistic shot at finishing ahead of the Canucks. And then look, the betting markets still don't. But Farabee and Frost, I like those fits. How do you see what that trade does in terms of changing their complexion over the balance?
Yeah, I think it was a really smart bet on their part, considering the price, considering the age of the two guys. One's turning 25, the other's turning 26, and the offensive juice that they're going to provide them, in particular with some of the rush attack. I know that Farabee has regressed this year, but you look at his shooting percentage, it's kind of half of what it was in the previous 3 years. I think he's going to give them a bit of an offensive punch there in terms of scoring off the rush in particular. I've loved Morgan Frost's game for years. I see why he drives coaches crazy. I get why the market for him around the league wasn't as high as you'd think. But a 26-year-old center with that type of playmaking and passing ability is still very difficult to find. They barely scratch the surface of their draft capital, right? They give up the second this year, the seventh in 2028. They still have two firsts, a second, and their full complement of picks next year. It's a team that's 28th. In scoring, right?
Yeah.
I'm still not sure whether they're going to be the team that ultimately makes the wild card here in the West, but we should note that all of a sudden now, both the Canucks and the Flames are within 2 points, I believe, of the LA Kings.
That's true.
And so what seemed like it was a two-horse race there, all of a sudden it involves a third Pacific team, potentially opens up another playoff spot in the West, and I think this race in the final 30 games or so is going to be fascinating.
I'll also say, you know, you throw in another team,
Colorado,
below the Kings in points percentage, right? So we'll see how they adjust to life without Mikko Rantanen, if they make a follow-up move, all of that.
Do you buy? I'm not buying that the Kings are going to fall out. I think
the Kings are not very good, man.
They control games too well 5-on-5. That's my view.
They've scored, the past three games,
yes,
they scored two goals.
I know.
And one of them was Moritz Seider deking out Cam Talbot and scoring in his own net inexplicably.
Yeah, they're also shooting 4%, though.
I get it. I still wouldn't expect them to, be a 4% team, but definitely not top 20
in terms
of shooting percentage either.
But they're going to get back to double that.
They will. Yeah. I think Drew Doughty came back this week. Mikey Anderson promptly got hurt.
Yep.
And so keep that in mind as well. I just think if I were a Kings fan, I saw a post-game presser with their coach Jim Hiller yesterday, and there was a question of like, do you think this team needs to look externally to improve its offense? And he's like, no, I like the way we're playing. And I'm like,
how dare you?
I really hope you're just saving face here, because there's not much to like in terms of actually watching these games offensively. They're still quite clearly a dominant defensive team, and that's going to increase their floor and probably get them a playoff spot. But these three teams we're talking about here in the Flames, Kings, and Canucks are like 25th, 27th, and 28th in the league in offensive expected goals generated. And so I think that's a very telling part of this story in terms of why these teams have struggled and why they're so tight. And basically whoever I think can scrounge together enough goals in these final 32 games is probably going to be the difference maker.
Which is wild considering the trade conversations we're having about the Vancouver Canucks right now. But I did want to talk more about the Mikko Rantanen deal with you. Of course, it happened last Friday, so it was our first chance to chat since it went down.
Yep.
Let's start with the Carolina Hurricanes perspective. And I mean, you know, the easy read on the trade is like they've constantly been looking for that, you know, really elite talent to flesh out their forward group. Now they get it with Mikko Rantanen. What do you think about his fit and what it does for their profile as a Stanley Cup contender?
Yeah, I mean, he's on the short list of players with, first off, those combination of skills in terms of his efficiency as a shooter and also as a playmaker at that size. His ability to just turn shots into goals at a high rate is exactly what this team needs. They have the infrastructure in place to cover for him defensively and to do all the stuff that he's potentially limited at this point of his career. So I love that. I'm probably in the top percentile of Marty Natchez appreciators, as we've documented on the show over the past couple of years, seemingly. So I don't necessarily dislike it from Colorado's perspective for a variety of reasons. But for Carolina, just like we talked about with Jake Ensel last year, this was the type of move I think they needed to make to try to get over the hump. We'll see if it's a long-term fit in terms of retaining him once he hits the market this summer and all that. But for right now, considering the price they paid, where in both those deals, they didn't move a first, they didn't move any of their top prospects. Marty Natchez is obviously a phenomenal player in his prime, but upgrading at that position for the price they paid, like, that's a bet that I think you have to make if you're the Hurricanes.
And even Natchez, it's like they had a unsettled relationship with the player, right? So we all kind of knew it probably wasn't going to be a long-term thing. So yeah, he's a talented guy, but okay, you were going to move on at some point anyways, right?
And that's another one, we talk about the Hurricanes and the way they do business and all of that. Last summer at the draft, it seemed like they were going to trade him for pennies on a dollar because they couldn't come to terms on a long-term deal. They signed him to a two-year bridge, basically. He starts off the year red hot, dyes his hair blonde, as all the cool kids are doing these days. I think he was leading the league in scoring on December 6th, and it all worked out perfectly from, like, a not rehabbing his value because he's been this player his entire career, but in terms of, like, him performing at his absolute apex and then cashing in on that when they did, I think it was a shrewd bit of business from the Hurricanes' perspective. So yeah, I think it made a lot of sense. We can talk. Do you want to talk from the perspective,
just
a little bit?
You know, not even so much with the fit with Natchez, but it was just such a massive move. Because you think, like, Colorado, MacKinnon, Makar, Rantanen, right? We're so used to them being just the three superstars in that lineup. How do you view Colorado now, just overall in the landscape of the Western Conference? Like, I can't mentally check them out of the, like, oh, they're a contender for sure box, but you start to look at the talent and the roster, and I'm like, are they though? I don't know. Where do you land on Colorado?
Yeah, it's tough to get a proper feel for it just because of the injuries they've had the entire year. They've had like five games, I think, all year where they had their full complement of wingers. Nichushkin is still out now after Drouin came back. So we'll see. I think it's going to be a clear adjustment period, and that's probably why they did it here in January as opposed to waiting until closer to the deadline, because you could see right after the trade, both MacKinnon and Bednar were like clearly rocked by it. The on-ice fit of like the chemistry all those years built up between MacKinnon and Rantanen, and then Newton H is coming in, different type of player, different expectations. The Avs play such an extreme style offensively in terms of their movement in the O zone, so that's going to require a bit of an adjustment period. But I do really like what I've seen from Natchez there. I think in terms of doubling down on team speed and pace and trying to attack you off the rush, he helps there. And you already see in these three games he's played, like, when him and MacKinnon are out there, you're just on the edge of your seat. And if you're the opposition, you're just like praying that the shift ends because it's just endless high danger opportunities for the Avs. Mm-hmm. So I like it. Like, listen, they bought themselves more time here, right? Because Natchez is under contract next year. They saved a bit of money. They got Jack Drury, who is Thomas's one of his favorite players and was a key piece to this deal, according to him. They also got a second and a fourth, which can help facilitate a trade. I think they're going to give Casey Mittelstadt a bit more runway here to see if just playing with like more solid wingers can get him back to the form he was in down the stretch last year for them, because he's been such a disappointment. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see them use Mittelstadt's salary and some of these other pieces to upgrade at 2C. And so we'll revisit it. I think it's still a TBD for them because I don't think they're done between now and the deadline.
Yeah, it definitely seems like another move is coming at second line center. Even, I don't know, it feels like it's over for Mittelstadt there. Maybe not. Maybe they give him the chance to turn it around, but we'll see. Are there any high-end centers on the market?
I don't know. Have you heard of any?
I mean, there's centers. We'll see.
There's centers.
Are there any that have performed as high-end centers this year?
That's a good question.
No.
Brock Nelson?
Does Brock Nelson have more points than JT Miller and Elias Pettersson?
The answer is yes.
Certainly, right?
Yep, the answer
definitely
is yes.
Definitely more goal scored.
Definitely than Elias Pettersson.
I think definitely than JT Miller. JT Miller's 34, right?
Yeah, he has 32. Nelson.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So they're all, realistically,
they're all, right,
they're all bunched up together.
Yep. Yeah, but 32 points on the Islanders is like 74 points.
Although, to be fair, we're talking Rick Tocchet Canucks here. So let's not get ahead of ourselves.
That is true.
Look, the Islanders and the Canucks are basically the same team.
Although the Islanders having D'Angelo, Perunovic, Adam Boakvist in a, like, what, like a 2 week span here? Less, even like a 10 day span.
Yeah.
I want to see all of those guys in the lineup together, just like all offense, you know, no defense, defense core.
You know what, though? It's Patrick Roy. Remember, who was it? Was it Andre Benoit was the defender who, like, he played him like 24 minutes a night in Colorado when they made the playoffs? It was incredible. So I think Wah is pretty comfortable just finding, like, a defensively reliable smaller body and being like, you're a first pair defenseman now.
Well, and like, because they've had so many injuries on the blue line.
Yeah.
And we've seen Isaiah George step in and, like, he moves so well and he's been eating up big minutes for them. And so that's, it's an area of opportunity that I think they've been able to make the most out of. But yeah, I don't think we need to spend too much more time on breaking down the Islanders.
No, we certainly don't.
Let's move on. Certainly do not.
Let's move on. What did you make of just the ongoing frou-frou in Vancouver and the fact that it hit another level and of sort of fever pitch this week?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the timing was somewhat surprising after the team's first consecutive win streak, and so I think that caught people off guard. I think anyone that's been paying attention, maybe this is like the first sort of real public acknowledgement, yes. I guess, and that's a departure, but for the most part, it's not anything new that you've heard behind the scenes or at least speculated about online. So I don't think it's like, whoa, this just came out of nowhere and just, you know, cannonballed into the pool. So I don't think it changes it that much. Obviously it's bizarre because when you're telegraphing so clearly that you want to move someone and then you're like, no, it's really bad here. Trust me. Like it's even worse than you thought.
We cannot win with these players.
It's a bold negotiating strategy. Certainly. But otherwise in terms of like legitimate intel that we didn't know about, I don't think it really changed that much. So the timing was bizarre, but ultimately, especially with JT Miller and even Pettersson, I'd say, although, you know, trying to parse what's been going on with his performance the past calendar year or so throws a wrench in it, but like they are two relatively established players in terms of their skill sets and what the theoretical ideal of them provides. So I don't think it's necessarily game changing. Like if you're a team that's interested in these guys, I don't think that seeing that report like change your mind. No, all of a sudden you've probably done your own background checks.
So. We've heard that all through the process, right? Is that teams are trying to find out as much as they can about what's gone on here in Vancouver and, you know, talking about the players, you know, talking to their own players about what do you think about these guys? So again, you're absolutely right. It's just so rare to see it so clearly stated.
Everyone always
in public.
Like saves face so much with this stuff, right? It's like, no, everything's totally fine.
Yeah, no,
while
it's
like
great.
The house is burning behind you. So it is a departure from that. But yeah, any team that was acquiring or interested in acquiring either of these guys was not like blindsided by this.
The only thing I do think it changes a little is that as much as he was like, well, maybe, you know, who knows? We'd love to keep both players if stuff turns around. Like when you actually read the rest of what he said, makes it very difficult for me to see the path forward for these guys here in Vancouver. When you're like, I just don't think we can win with this core. Like that's tough to come back from as those players. So that's the only thing that moved the needle.
Hasn't that really,
for me.
For that, but more- I think that's been the case for almost 2 months now, realistically.
Yeah.
And I think if they could get what they wanted, 100%. They would have already done it regardless. Mm-hmm. So I don't think like even internally, I don't think seeing that come out and seeing more people talking about it, I don't think that necessarily changes the dynamic.
I just think once you say it publicly, it's harder to change your mind.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? You're like, never mind. We like you guys again.
Yeah,
you know?
It's out there.
Yeah, it's out there and everyone knows about it now, even though you had already made the decision.
I figured we could draft. Maybe we do a twofer. Maybe we do two drafts. What if we draft?
No, we're not doing two drafts.
Why? We
start one draft.
Why?
I don't want to do two drafts.
Why not?
I want to do one good draft.
I'm cranky. Wait, I'm Jamie Dodd.
Who are the?
That's right.
One draft only. I was thinking we could
Jamie
do
Jamie one draft Dodd.
I was thinking we could do JT Miller trade destinations and then Elias Pettersson trade destinations, but we can just do JT Miller ones.
Or lump it into one.
Yeah.
And then you can make your pick.
Let's do that.
You can make your pick of player and team.
Okay.
And so are we doing most likely?
Most interesting, and are we and you have to pick a primary piece coming back.
Ooh, okay.
So we'll add a layer of difficulty.
Sounds good.
Drance, you can go first.
I can go first because I set this one up.
Yeah, this is a good draft, by the way.
This is.
I'm glad we merged.
One of the most logical ones I've done.
You think so?
I mean, it's a pretty low bar to clear, but it's no pants draft, but
okay. I'm going to go with Washington. I want to see JT Miller in Washington. I think that'd be fun as heck. Tom Wilson, JT Miller, Alexi Protas, just like a lot of big skill guys. They'd be a heavy team. It'd be a ton of fun. Maybe they don't have to run out two separate, you know, defensemen on the power play.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem with Washington is I don't think they'd subtract from their NHL roster. Right? So, like, I'm going to go with Ferravari and Crystal as what I'd be looking for.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, that would be a slam dunk.
For the Canucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get a fast defenseman.
Yeah.
You get a sick prospect from Carisdale.
Yeah.
Sure. There that. You go.
Yeah.
Got to get the Carisdale guy back.
Yeah. I mean, I think we talked about this maybe last week, but on the one hand, the vibes have been so good in Washington that I find it hard to believe that they would make a move of that magnitude, especially considering the baggage. On the other hand, if their pro scouting signs off on it, then you almost have to just go with it blindly.
Also, like, if you throw Logan Thompson, Pierre-Luc Dubois, and Jacob Chychrun into a situation, and then you're like, our vibes are great.
Yeah.
Like, what can you add that won't ruin the vibes?
Yeah.
If Pierre-Luc Dubois didn't do it.
Yeah.
Surely JT Miller won't.
True. No, that's fair.
All right, Dim, you're up.
Okay. I'm going to go with Pettersson.
Okay.
And I'm going to go to the Blue Jackets. And I'm not going to formulate the full trade.
No. Neither did I.
As a centerpiece, I think Kent Johnson.
Let's go.
Would be probably the best player in terms of age, skill set, upside, and then contract status that you could realistically get in a trade here. I think he makes like just over $2 million for the next 2 years, I believe. And then obviously still has RFA rights after that. We've seen him. He got injured early in the year. He's looked so good since he's come back. I just think his offensive upside is almost unlimited. Like, he's so talented, and we've seen him actually realize it in terms of on-ice production this year. And so just in terms of like trying to get back a player that actually improves your team offensively, I feel like he's probably the best player that this Canucks team can get right now. So
there's a reason.
Obviously another local guy.
There's a reason. We're only trading for BC kids.
Okay. Yes. We can't just say local. We have to specify like
what neighborhood.
Really granular. Yeah.
What their favorite coffee shop is.
you have to actually associate them with their winter club.
What was their regular sushi restaurant? On their block. That's what we want to know here.
I guess Kent Johnson played for both North Shore and Burnaby Winter Club.
There you go. I also think there's a reason Columbus keeps coming up in connection with Pettersson, right? Like, Kent Johnson makes so much sense for all the reasons you're laying out there if they actually want to go.
Yeah, because I feel like Fantilli isn't on. Like, not going to happen, I don't think. So
doesn't seem like it, but I don't know.
Pettersson with Marchenko, I think, would be so sick. By the way.
Okay, I'm going to go JT Miller to Boston because of the spice factor here, right? You know, you obviously still have the Canucks and Bruins history and the bad blood there. Also, JT Miller joining a Brad Marchand team, that seems very entertaining to me. Nikita Zadorov is still there, so they've got that connection. Elias Lindholm. So I think that would make just a very entertaining situation. Also, like, you know, goes to a pretty hot media environment. As much as it's in the Eastern United States, still has to deal with that. So I'll go JT Miller to Boston, and I guess it would probably be like Pavel Zacha as the main piece coming back, the center off the roster. He has a limited no trade clause or a modified no trade clause, but that's probably the one that makes the most sense there. So not exactly exciting as the centerpiece of a return, but hey, a guy you can plug into your lineup. And I think the spiciness level for Miller in Boston would be really entertaining as well. And then I'll do a Pettersson one for my snake pick here. And I'll go the other team that's come up a lot, and that's Buffalo. And I'm not the Dylan Cousins, Bowen Byram doesn't interest me. If they were willing to go to Owen Power, then I'm talking. Then it's like, okay, that gets me thinking. And
you want the all Michigan blue line.
That's right. Yeah, let's go. I also just think if you're trying to limit the risk as the Canucks on an Elias Pettersson deal, send him to an equally cursed franchise, not in a major media market on the other side of the continent. Like, where can he do the least damage to the Canucks? Where can he come back to haunt you the least? It's probably the Buffalo Sabres. Do that deal.
I still think he can haunt you.
Oh, but it's like, oh, it's like, hey, he had another 95-point season with the Sabres, and they lost in the first round. You know what I mean?
Okay, what if doing the trade, though, breaks
the mutual, Buffalo curse?
Breaks the mutual curse of the 1970s expansion pact and makes the Canucks singularly cursed among the two.
But what if it breaks both curses? They trade a first overall pick and Owen Power.
Sorry, Owen Power ain't breaking no curses. Barely breaking.
I think they should get together and think about this. Trying to break the curse together. I think get Kevin Adams on the horn, pitch this past him.
Fair enough.
See what he has to say.
Now you've spoken about this on this program, right? Why Pettersson is not going to go to Buffalo.
Yes, I have.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That's true.
The theory about the signing bonuses.
$10 million this summer, 25 more million spread over the rest of the contract.
Yeah,
if it happens, I'll be like, all right, I was wrong.
Yeah,
but it has not been their MO. You even look at
the long term contracts
they signed. They gave Owen Power like a $2 million signing bonus.
And today they're facing $30 million in cap growth across the next 3 years. You know, like that's something.
Plus, they got a new Jumbotron. So I mean, you know,
sick.
Yeah,
secondhand.
That's where all the Pettersson money went.
Yes,
secondhand like the Canucks. Anyway, I'll let you go.
Okay, yeah, I mean, that was a good pickup. Pettersson for Power would have been my next selection. I do like JT Miller to the Stars from an interesting perspective. I just, in terms of what you'd be getting back, I don't think it would be anything that groundbreaking, to be honest. I honestly think that the biggest asset would be the end of the drama and cap space. Like, I don't...
Which are big assets.
Which are big assets, certainly, especially moving forward. I just think in terms of the playoff push this year and what you'd get back in terms of a player that could help you, I don't really see, like, they're not going to give up Stankoven. It would be like, maybe if you're lucky, Maverick Bork, who's a nice player and young and cheap. So that would be nice, but not someone who would step in and you'd be like, all right, wow, our season's saved. We're going to start scoring in the top half of the league again. So I'm not sure that's the only thing kind of for why I'm tepid in terms of that pick. But in terms of this exercise of like player to team, I do think Miller to Dallas makes a lot of sense.
I like it. Plus the ownership rivalry. So that'd be a good one.
And I'm going off the board. You ready for this? A huge swing from the Florida Panthers.
Ooh.
Sam Bennett. Canucks get to chat with him beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They're going to be a hard scrabble Rick Tocchet hockey team. Sam Bennett. And I guess to make the cap work, he's probably got to be like Bennett and Knight. And then they trade the Michigan forward, Samuskevich. They get Demko and Pettersson back.
I mean, Samuskevich is an infinitely
better asset. Don't you need more for Pettersson?
Well, no.
Samuskevich is the best asset in the deal.
I was going to say, Samuskevich is a much better asset than Bennett. I feel like you bury the lead there. You're like, you get Bennett, and you also get Samuskevich.
Because you're doing the Knight for Demko, I think you can... They're trading some future, but they're also trading for a younger guy and sort of raising their upside. They're like, we're going Lundell, Pettersson, Barkov down the middle for the next infinity years. Good luck to you.
Yeah.
I think you need more if you're the Canucks than pending UFA Sam Bennett and Sam Miskevich.
Well, no, you get the right to talk to him beforehand.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It's not moving the needle that much.
But you're getting Sam Miskevich. That's as good a prospect as... any that we've discussed in this over the course of this. And then I guess I'll go with another one. I'm going to go Colorado. You get, I guess, Mittelstadt and Callum Ritchie for JT Miller. You probably don't get Callum Ritchie. You get Drury and...
Jack Drury, baby!
You get Drury and Mittelstadt for
JT Miller. The amount of time you would spend talking about Jack Drury in this program is nauseating appalling. To even think about.
It'd be appalling, you're right.
Okay,
big fan. Big Jack Drury guy.
I want to wrap just by mentioning a couple from the inbox. Actually, they both come from Tyler, who says, I missed part of the draft, but he says, I want Elias Pettersson to go to Chicago. Now, he says for Bedard, that's not happening. But if you're just talking about like drama levels.
No, but he said angry Bedard.
Yes, because, but for Canucks fans, like that's the nightmare scenario.
Yeah.
Elias Pettersson goes to Chicago and hometown kid, North fan, Lynn Valley's own Connor Bedard. All of a sudden, all's right, and they go on and they, you know, dominate together for the next 5 years or whatever. That's the true nightmare scenario.
Well, especially because it gives Bedard someone to play off and keeps him in Chicago.
Yeah. That. So that's the absolute worst case scenario, I think, on the board. This one I like. Miller to the Leafs for Mitch Marner. If they don't think they're going to be able to sell him or to sign him. Canucks get to talk to Mitch Marner early with all their cap space all of a sudden.
I mean, I love Mitch Marner. Like, I think Mitch Marner is a massively undervalued star player. He wouldn't be my top winger, though, that I would, like, even pursue an unrestricted free agency this summer.
Yeah.
Well, that would be Rantanen.
Well, I mean, even beyond Rantanen, it would be Ehlers.
Of course.
And then Marner. But
I'm just saying, I like getting creative. Now, Miller's not waving to go to Toronto.
No,
there's zero chance of that.
I would think you're right. Maybe Matthews puts on the hard sell at Four Nations. You just cross your fingers.
It's not that bad here, I swear.
I have a burger. Have you heard about my burger?
I call it pizza instead of pizza. All right, that's the draft for today. I was going to say that's the show, but it's not. Jim threw me for a loop here coming in at one. So we got to do a whole other segment coming up on the other side. But Dimitri, always appreciate it, man. Thank you for doing this. Have a great weekend. And we're back with the final segment of Canucks Talk next here on Sportsnet 650. Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Strantz here. We are broadcasting live from the Kintech studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. Somebody in the inbox called me Draft Dodger Dodd because I tried to get out of the two drafts in the last segment. But it worked. It was all for the best. That was the best version of the draft. Draft Dodger Dodd.
You're making the furniture Jay for the Calgary.
No. Stop.
What?
What?
All the furniture at the NOM was made by Draft Dodgers.
I did not know that.
Man, come on. Know your quirky Vancouver history,
I have not
bro.
Been to the NOM in a long, long time.
Who has?
I don't know.
I don't live over there anymore.
Yeah, it's true. I never go west of like Burrard Street anymore.
I also go to bed at like 11. No more 3 a.m. grilled cheese for me.
All right, 650, as mentioned, is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And this, a lot of questions coming in about the salary cap increase, what it may or may not mean specifically for the Vancouver Canucks and the circumstances they find themselves in. And Trey the Gulf Island Ferry Worker texts in, I have a question about Pettersson and the projected cap growth. Isn't it a big mistake to trade him on his current deal when assuming cap grows as projected? And he says, big if, his cap hit will be a bargain as a percentage of the cap. It definitely pushes the needle towards keeping him. But the flip side
toward keeping Pettersson.
Yeah. But I think it's like the flip side is it also makes him a more attractive asset for other teams. Right. So that potentially increases the return. And then it's a similar thing with JT Miller. It's like, okay, well, are you as worried about the risk, the downside risk? No.
The point is like, percentage of the cap doesn't matter with players of Pettersson's caliber, provided that they're playing the way they are. And if he's playing the way he is right now, he's still not a bargain.
Yeah, if he's playing the way he is right now, I think the most pertinent situation is if he ticks up, but not back to where he was and kind of plateaus in at like first line player, but not a superstar range. You know what I mean? And right now in this salary cap environment, that's still a disaster at 11.6. But is it a disaster at 11.6 in a couple of years when it's 113 million.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I think it does. It decreases the downside risk. Salary cap hit. So, and that's one of the reasons to me that you would be seriously considering trading Elias Pettersson, is that you're like, we don't want to get stuck with a massive, massive albatross of a contract. The chances are slightly less, at least, that that happens given the salary cap going up. So I do think it changes the math. Although, as you were pointing out in the first segment, if it was just a question of the salary cap situation, I'm like, oh man, that's a lot to be committing to these two guys. I don't think we'd be having this conversation. If they worked together really well and the team was, you know, punching above its weight and greater than the sum of its parts and all that, it wouldn't matter that you were a little bit worried about their cap hits or their contracts or whatever. They'd be keeping these guys. So it does change the math, but also they're not in this situation mostly because of it. They're in because of the chemistry and all that stuff and the performance of the two players. So I don't know how much it ultimately changes it either.
I think fundamentally, I think if you've determined that this can't work and you've said that publicly, I do think, like, is there any scenario where you'd be convinced that this group should stay together and give it one more kick at the can?
I don't think so. Not for me.
Right.
And Rutherford did leave the door open a little bit, but not that much. Like, just the narrowest of cracks, I would say he left it open.
Yeah. Did he leave it open or did he preserve some leverage?
Sure.
Right? He more than anything was like, we're still on my timeline. Right? I'd say that it was more that than it was a, you know, hearty endorsement of what the Canucks have cooking.
Mm-hmm.
That's my characterization. I think people can feel free to agree with it, disagree with it. Now, I don't know that there's any cost to rushing to do this, right? Like, if the team waits till closer to the deadline, I don't think that's a problem necessarily. It's trying in that this is not a fun topic to discuss, mm-hmm. I don't think. We've done it all season, so I think we've become inured to it. But, like, man, this is such gossipy nonsense.
Well, it's out of the realm of gossip now, though.
No, it's still gossipy nonsense. No. Just because it's confirmed doesn't mean it's not gossipy nonsense.
Yeah, no, because gossip is like hearsay.
No.
Isn't it?
I don't know. I don't think so. The gossip is... I don't think the term
gossip... you can gossip about something that you witnessed firsthand.
The term gossip doesn't imply something...
That might not
be true.
That's
not credible.
Yeah.
It implies something that's like kind of lurid and, you know, about like human beings, basically. Like, you know, it's newsy, but it's
something
not
kind of
news.
Embarrassing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's not news. It's like, it's not important, I think, is fundamentally what it implies.
But I guess my point is, like, it clearly is important. It's crossed over from gossip into like a big material thing.
Well,
you
sure.
know what I mean?
But it's important in the context of like, this hockey team. It's not really important, right?
Yeah, but that's everything we talk about.
No, I know. For sure. Don't get me wrong. I'm not above it. I'm just sick of it.
Yeah.
It's like
I'm not better than this.
I've gotten to the point where, you know, when you have a friend who's always got the same problem.
Yes.
And they start talking about it and like,
and you've already given them good advice
and you find
and they haven't taken it
and you finally crack. You know, that's where I'm at.
I know exactly what you mean.
I'm like, God, it's not going to get better.
You keep doing the same thing. Why are you doing the same thing and then complaining about it?
So that's what that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at personally with what's going on, with what's cooking here. So my incentive, my bias is I'd love to see this get done quickly. So we can talk about hockey and we can talk about plans and we can talk about what this could look like. And, you know, it was fun last year to see this team combine like tactics and mentality in a thoughtful way to win games.
Yep.
Like, that was fun. I like seeing that sort of subtlety on the ice. I think they're capable of it. Like, I think this management group's capable of that. I think Rick Tocchet's capable of that. I think these players are capable of that in stretches.
Well, and I think beyond just us wanting to move on and wanting to, you know, have a trade to dig our teeth into and then look ahead, look to the future, like get back to the focus on the ice, which we all want. That would be incredible. That's not just us, though. That's the fans. Like, immediately we have a bunch of people texting in like, yeah, man, I would love that. Some of them angry at us. Some of them not.
Why? Why are they angry?
Oh, like, oh, you guys made a meal out of it every day. Whatever. It's a big story. Anyways.
We made a meal of it every day. We underplayed it, if anything.
My point is, that to me is not just like an ephemeral, like, oh, it's us and the fans whining about it or whatever. That's a real thing that has a business logic to it. To do the trade, like, what's the way to make this season more fun? Do the trade, to me. Now, I know there's still fans out there. It's like, well, but keep them and maybe they get on a run together or whatever. But if you've already made the decision, no, we got to move on. Your best chance at having good vibes down the stretch and getting people invested in this is making the trade, ripping the Band-Aid off, giving the team a chance to react and perform and get out, start, allow people to start getting on board with whatever the new version of the team looks like. So it's not to say that there's only upside by doing the trade quickly. I understand the logic of you got to hold firm and wait and see if you can get the deal you want and all of that. But there's definitely upside to it. It's not just, fans are being impatient or media is being impatient. There's some real significant upside from purely a business case, I think, you unlock if you really prioritize getting the deal done quickly.
Yeah, you're also at a point where, so, I mean, I'm of two minds. Like, you can't proceed recklessly here. Obviously, these are too important. And yet, man, it would also be reckless to have an injury derail something like this.
Yep.
Especially given, management's account of it being unworkable.
Especially considering the two players involved are going to the Four Nations, as we understand it. We haven't heard anything about them pulling out or anything.
No one.
Well, some people are. Petrangelo did.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. But, like, there's no reason for us to think that either Miller or Pettersson are doing that.
But if you're a team and this is your best shot, like, if you're a player and this is your best shot at playing high-level hockey this year, like, top-level hockey, you know what I mean? You have to, Pietrangelo might win another cup.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's a team. They signed Brandon Saad today, by the way.
They did.
Brandon Saad, whose performance this year means nothing because he was the most checked-out player I saw in the NHL. I remember watching that Blues game and remember how mad I was about his gentle forechecking?
I do remember that, yes.
Brandon Saad's the most checked out player I've seen in the NHL this season, and I cover the Vancouver Canucks. So
you're saying they're not getting that version of Brandon Saad?
No, I think he might be a really nice fit for them.
Yeah.
Much better than people realize, because I don't think people understand how singularly checked out he was this season. And I mean, leaving $5 million on the table just to get out of that situation kind of speaks volumes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But, to your point about, guys are really excited for this tournament, especially yes. If it's their chance to play that really high-level competitive hockey this year. So for that's Miller and Pettersson. That's a significant injury risk, right, where it's outside of your control. They're gone. They're playing for somebody else for the duration of that tournament. And as you said, that's a little bit reckless to just roll the dice and hope that they both come back okay and that the trades are still on the table. They have five games remaining before the Four Nations break. Dallas tonight, then Detroit, Colorado at home next week, one game in San Jose. Last one is next Saturday against the Maple Leafs before the break. So that's five games, and a texter points out,
Games, five Canucks wins.
That's right.
We're going streaking.
Eight game win streak. And this texter says, should we be talking about, or something we should be talking about more, is the pattern of this management group around trading, whether buying Lindholm or selling Horvat. They tend to make bigger trades right before All-Star break. We're a week out from Four Nations. Do we see a big move this week? My gut, I want to say yes. But I also have thought multiple times over the last 3 weeks, they'll make a move soon. Jason Bukala was in studio with me when you were off. He's like, they got to do something by Monday. Yeah, they almost did. They almost traded JT Miller. But we've already felt like we've gone through a bunch of these flashpoint moments or these kind of soft deadlines. You're right. I get what the texter is saying. It certainly feels like the layoff for the Four Nations could be another one of those. But we've already seen a lot of them. So who knows? We're just kind of in that waiting for Luan Godot period, as you put it, that purgatory, the waiting room feel right now for the Vancouver Canucks. I do wonder. I don't know. Again, Jim Rutherford, I mean, yes, he doesn't care if he makes it awkward for people. So because I was just thinking, do you make a trade before they come back home to play the Red Wings just to shake things up a little bit? But who knows? We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I do think the club has obviously been close enough frequently enough here that that if someone at some point just gets held out of a lineup, we're not going to be stunned by it.
Nope. Or pulled from a game.
Yeah.
That happened last night, right? Who was it that got, was it Pelche? Was he in the lineup?
Pelche was pulled.
Yep.
Mike Camilleri style.
That's right. So who knows? be on watch for that tonight in Dallas, I guess. Tatiana texts in, do you think knowing how the cap is going up the next few years could change things for the better with Besser's negotiations, or has the biggest issue always been term? That's from Tatiana.
I think the biggest issue has always been, so I have one thing you try to do over time when you cover a team, okay, is suspend to some extent how you think about things and try to learn how the team you cover thinks about things. You know what I'm saying? And over time, if you're decently good at like empathetic thinking, mm-hmm. right, you'll also learn stuff about the game that can improve your own opinions. Now, for Jim Rutherford, okay, I have a basic like back of the envelope rule that I apply to determining whether or not I think Jim Rutherford will like a player, or when I'm watching the Canucks play, what Jim Rutherford will think about a performance or an individual at training camp, on and on. And here's how I cut it up. Here's how I think about it. There are three types of players that Jim Rutherford really likes. Okay. Fast guys. Jim Rutherford really likes fast guys. Fast guys will always have a role on a Jim Rutherford team. Then there's big guys. Jim Rutherford loves big guys, and big guys will always have a role on a Jim Rutherford team. And then there's elite players. Okay? Elite players. Flat out, you are an elite player. You are the best of the best, and I love elite players. Elite players will always have a role on a Jim Rutherford team. Brock Besser is not a fast guy.
Mm-hmm.
Brock Besser is strong, but he is not a big guy. Is Brock Besser an elite guy?
I wouldn't say elite. I'd say he's really good.
He's a really good top of the lineup player.
Yeah, but he's not elite.
And so I don't think term's been the issue. I don't think money's been the issue. I think it's simply been a question of, is this our guy? And I think that's always been the case. I think that was the case when they signed the bridge deal. The second bridge deal, because the Besser's now signed to two bridge deals.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more about like, hey, look, like you've produced at a level where you're going to make bank, you know, without question. This is going to be an expensive long-term deal. Are you the sort of player that we want to build around, especially if we're changing our competitive horizon somewhat, given how this season has unfolded? I think that's been the issue the whole way. I think it's, do the Canucks believe in the guy?
And they've kind of said that going back to the end of last season, right? Yeah. Like, hey, we kind of want to see him do it again. We're going to keep evaluating.
I'm not like working too hard to pull subtext out of, you know, my backside.
Mm-hmm.
This is very much there, both on the record and in terms of the fact pattern that we're dealing with. So anyway, I think that's a helpful frame. And I invite our listeners to apply it as well. Even if you're putting together your own fake trade packages, think to yourself, is it a big guy? Is it a fast guy?
Are they fast?
Or are they an elite guy?
And as Gert from Surrey texts in, so with what you explained, your answer about what Rutherford likes makes sense why Natchez was their guy, one of the fastest players in the NHL.
Correct.
Right? So even you can look at it and think like, well, is he really a fit for Rick Tocchet? Maybe not. But he's certainly a fit for Jim Rutherford, given his very particular skill set and his skating ability. I do think that's an interesting, maybe developing story with the Vancouver Canucks, is for all we talk about alignment, and there's clearly a level of trust and a really good working relationship with coaching and management, it doesn't always seem like the player archetypes line up perfectly. You know what I mean? Where, like, even think of like the Nils Höglander contract extension and the usage he's tended to get from Rick Tocchet. It does feel like sometimes there's a little bit of a disconnect between the guys Tocchet wants to give minutes to and deploy and trust, and the players that management sometimes really believes in.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true to some extent. Certainly, like, I think there was some internal disagreement on Brännström over the course of the season.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think I wouldn't view it as like on a different page necessarily, so much as like there's a collaborative approach to how this, you know, operation functions with Rutherford as the president of hockey operations. Like, oh, there's a lot of voices, and that's by design. The point isn't that we all have to agree. The point is that when we walk out of the room, we've decided, mm-hmm. and we respect that decision. right? And so I think that's like that's how it should function. That's what the goal is. Is it always perfectly aligned? Like, that's impossible. It's not human nature. There's always going to be lingering disagreement. But, you know, I think that worked really well in terms of what the team was able to construct last year. I think maybe you can see the seams a little bit more this year. You know, I noted very early in the season that it felt to me like the thought up front was a separate thought from the construction on the back end, and I didn't really know how those fit together. And I think that observation has only been sort of fueled as we've gone through this campaign. But, you know, I don't know that I'd like put a negative on. Yeah, there's fundamental.
Oh, I'm not saying it's like a rift, to use a favorite word around here or anything, but it just does make it interesting because you hear Natchez and it's like, oh yeah, Jim Rutherford, one of the fastest guys in the league, of course. But then you think about the Tockett fit and it's like, I don't know about that. So it just makes it interesting when you're kind of thinking about potential targets out there and trying to evaluate how they fit in the Canucks lineup or in the Canucks plans. All right, that is the show for today. Canucks taking on the Dallas Stars coming up in just about 3 hours, 5 o'clock here. And of course, you'll hear full pregame and game coverage on the station. Have a great weekend. We are back on Monday here on Sportsnet 650.